Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, last week we promised everybody we're going to get through the offense, and we were totally lying because we didn't get through it. We have one more section to go today, and since we have no player movement, no coach movement to speak of, at least within the team, we're going to start talking about the offensive line. So, who do we got? Who's going to be gone?
There was a minor player signed, but he's a linebacker, so we'll get to him.
Okay,
today.
Well, we'll get to it in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So, the offensive line is actually in pretty decent shape, except for the status of TJ Lang, which is obviously the big question mark. They return basically the entire two deep, offensive line, with the exception of TJ Lang being the big question mark, right? So at left tackle, you've got Decker and Crosby, and then at left guard, Ragnow had a nice rookie season, and Dahl was his backup.
Fullback.
Fullback. At center, you had Graham Glasgow, and technically, Ragnow would have been the number two, but Kolomatangi
was hanging around.
Yep, and he was promoted at the end of the season. TJ Lang was the right guard. He was backed up by Kenny Wiggins. Both have one more year left on their contract. Right tackle was Rick Wagner, and for all intents and purposes, Crosby was the backup there as well. Andrew Donnell, who was on the roster but didn't play a single snap, he is the only offensive line free agent that they have. So, really, they're returning, almost everybody here, and so that is good from a experience and continuity standpoint. But again, the big issue is with TJ Lang, because if he leaves, he's arguably your best offensive lineman, and you have a big hole there at right guard. Now, last year, that was filled by Kenny Wiggins. But Kenny Wiggins struggled, and in my mind, shouldn't be expected to be the starter again next year. And if Lang does not return, the question becomes, are they willing to try and move Tyrell Crosby over into right guard, which is where a lot of analysts projected him to play coming out of college. That we've talked in the past previously about the Oregon system being a very easy transition for tackles to guard from Oregon to the NFL. And so maybe they slide Crosby over, which would be a very nice move in my opinion. They would have Wiggins there as support, but they could go a different route entirely and bring somebody in, or maybe even Lang return. So right now we just don't know, really what the status is. So we operate with the expectation that no news means Lang's coming back, but I do believe they're going to have a game plan. The game plan will be they need to have a replacement for Lang. They need to have somebody now who can step up if Lang is injured. They need somebody who can step up in case Lang retires, and if he is able to play a full year uninhibited by injury, they're still going to need somebody long term. So a right guard is definitely going to be on the agenda. It just, the level of severity is the big question mark.
All right. So we want to talk about, let's jump into the questions.
Sure. We can look at free agency if you want. I don't think there's a free agency question about this. We've talked previously about Glowinski being a guy who would have been
gone,
a nice fit.
Off the list.
They took him, he's re-signed. The next big name, in my opinion, if you need a guy who's going to come in and start, is Roger Saffold, the Rams.
Saw him play in the Super Bowl.
Yep. He has said that he wants to return to the Rams, but he's also not going to settle for a hometown discount. He wants to be compensated properly. Because you got to remember, Saffold wasn't a homegrown Ram. He was in another organization, then joined the Rams and found in success there. So I don't know if there's really anybody in free agency that jumps out at me that would really be an upgrade to Wiggins outside of maybe Saffold, or maybe you could go and grab one of the centers that are out there, which would be okay if you think they can transition. But there's a lot more options in the draft, especially guys that aren't going to be going on day one. There's a handful of guys on day two that would be, you know, nice plug-and-play guys that could step up if you need. But you could probably, in this class, even find some guys early day three if you're willing to wait that you could potentially develop. Or, you know, maybe even you get a steal like you did in Crosby last year where you find a guy that can come in. So my guess is they're probably going to address guard in the draft at some point. But I would think it would be no sooner than the third round and probably no later than the sixth. But I expect a guard to come through the draft at some point.
All right, Sean Claver asks, any idea how the new offensive coordinator will affect our blocking scheme? Also, is our personnel better suited for man or zone blocking?
It's a power concept, but it's mostly going to be like zone, right? So they're going to try and get the offensive line moving as a collective group, and that is similar to what they've been doing, and that fits in line with acquiring offensive linemen with a high amount of athleticism, which they have. And so I don't think it's going to change much from what we've seen. It's just going to be more of it, and more run concepts, which will be something that the offensive linemen enjoy.
All right, Derek's question. With all the talk about this being the best offensive line Bevel has seen in his career, what changes do you foresee being made? Lang, Wiggins, free agent edition, rookies.
Yeah, you know, I did say I expect a rookie because they have Wiggins under contract, so they don't necessarily need to go and get a free agent. I don't know really which way. I go back and forth on Lang, like which way, if he's going to stay or go. His social media presence and just his public persona just screams he's coming back. The way he interacts with teammates, it just doesn't seem like he's ready to walk away. But if he returns, you have to have a better plan than Wiggins right now. So the draft is probably how you compensate that.
All right, I'm going to have you ask the next question.
Yeah, Waleed Baghdadi sent you a question. He said, Joe, Bo Nunn is still alive in the AFF. What is the percentage chance that he gets recalled to the Lions?
Now, I was, oddly enough, pontificating about this before we started the podcast, before I saw the question. Eric knows my affinity for fringe football, whether it be in Canada or in the arena, or of the extreme variety, or now in this case of the American Alliance of Football, or the Alliance of American Football. I did it in the wrong order. Bo Nunn, who I famously predicted would eventually play in a game, maybe even start for the Lions, did not happen. He didn't find his way back on the roster the whole season. He's a member of the San Diego Fleet, being coached by ex-Lions offensive coordinator Mike Martz. So the percentage chance, I would hope he starts, number one. I am going to be following the San Diego Fleet, and I'm going to try to, you know, I want to know if Bo Nunn's playing. And the percentage chance he gets called back to the Lions, I'm going to say it's low, because what I was saying to Eric was, are they going to have these guys play 10, 11 games of this spring schedule, and these guys are just going to end up in the NFL 4 months later? Maybe they will. I mean, it'd be great for them. There's a couple of paychecks, but aren't some people going to be shouting, like, is this too much football for them?
Yeah. It's a valid point.
So I'm going to give it a 10% chance. We'll see Bo Nunn again. He might want to stick with the Martz and the Fleet.
That's higher than I thought.
Right. Well, okay. No, you're likely right, but I want to give him a chance.
That's good. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to point out before we move on to defense is that I think what makes this draft class intriguing is there's a handful of tackles that are like Crosby. Are potential guys that could shift inside. And some of those guys are going to be appealing to the Lions. And if they don't have long-term plans for Decker or Wagner, I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes a bit more of a priority. So if they're just trying to replace Lang, like I said, I'm sticking with that 3 to 6 round range to target a guard. But if they're looking to replace either Wagner or a Decker, we could see a guard, maybe even in like a tackle guard guy in the second round. If that happens, we know one of them's in trouble.
It's also worth noting, I I made mention of the XFL by saying extreme, and yes, I know the X did not stand for extreme, so if anybody's going to write in about that, please do, because I figure I'm the only one who knew that, or even cared. All right, moving on to the interior defensive line. We're going to flip on to the other side of the line of scrimmage. Yeah. First, who's coming back?
Well, you know, again, like on the offensive line, you're retaining a lot of the key players up front. But there's one big question mark. And with the Lions scheme, you know, we've talked in the past about how they run a 3-3-5 defensive front, but with that Jack linebacker essentially acting as like a rushing edge off, you know, but lives at the linebacker level. But if we're just focusing on the low guys, there's Snacks Harrison, who was just named the number 40 player in the NFL by PFF.
Very excited by that.
I liked it. It gave me a chance to remind people that we only gave up a fifth round pick to get him, which is still very hilarious.
And if you redrafted the whole league, he would be the eighth pick of the second round by that theory.
Yeah.
If you had to redraft the whole league.
Right. I agree. I mean, mathematically, I agree.
Yeah. It's probably not what happened in actuality.
Right. And then A'shaun is in the final year of his contract, who has shown well as the three technique. And then Deshaun Hand, who is really the chess piece that really can move all over that defensive line. So, again, in Hand, PFF just pointed out that Hand's pass rushing grade is the highest pass rushing grade for a rookie interior defensive lineman ever since they started grading.
Ever.
Since 2006.
All right, yeah. Ever's 12 years.
Right.
All right.
But in that 12 years, that included guys like Aaron Donald.
J.J. Watt.
Right? And so, well, I think technically he would have been an edge.
But, this is only interior defensive line.
Right.
Sorry.
But, I mean, you got Sue, you got Donald, you got these guys that are in there, and Hand's pass rushing grade was better. And so, again, speaks to his versatility. And that kind of sets us up for, you know, because he can be used in so many different ways, it gives them some leverage in how they can play around with that defensive end spot. Because that down defensive end spot is the real big question mark. Ansa technically was the starter, although he didn't play a whole lot. He was the franchise guy who, for all intents and purposes, isn't going to return. Aquara, who they got off of waivers, was their starter pretty much the entire year. He's a restricted free agent. No reason to think he won't be back. He should be back.
He will receive a qualifying offer.
Yeah, a couple million dollars, which will be a nice paycheck for him. And he will most likely be in a rotation either with an addition in free agency or probably a high draft pick. It's one or the other, right? They have to give Aquara somebody, but they can go a lot of different routes in this. They can get a guy who mirrors Ziggy Ansah, like you know, a 6'5", 275-pound defensive end, kind of like a Rashawn Gary. They can draft Gary in the first round, put Gary right in that Ansah role, and then there you go. Or they could take a guy like Brian Burns, who out of Florida State, who is more like the size of Devin Kennard, actually a little bit lighter, and you could say, well, now we're going to play with two Jack linebackers on the field at the same time, but we're going to use Aquara and maybe Deshaun Hand to kind of rotate through that down defensive end spot, but also maybe use Devin Kennard in that down defensive end spot and Burns out at Jack or vice versa. And so they could go a few different ways here to try and, you know, upgrade that defensive end spot. So while logic says the guys that they have in-house and the guys that they're losing, if they want to replace them, you're probably looking for 6'5", 265, or a little bit heavier. But don't be surprised if they start changing things up a bit and maybe add another guy who kind of fits that Jack mold, except I want to use him in a rotation with Doc Wire. There's really a ton of choices out there, and you know, we'll get into those. We have a couple questions, so maybe we'll go to the questions first.
All right, so Steven Misilovsky
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
You know what I should have done? Well, we're going to the edge. Yeah, we do not have any questions for the interior.
I didn't address who was leaving. I didn't finish my roster assessment, right? The big names.
We apologize for the poor organization.
of the guys that are not on, that don't have a contract right now, the big one's Ricky Jean Francois, who was an interior defensive lineman.
And the locker room voice.
Yes.
Presence.
Right. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see him re-signed. But if he doesn't, I also wouldn't be surprised to see them add a defensive tackle late on day three as well, somebody that can come in. Don't expect a defensive tackle early. You could also see them add some undrafted guys, which they've done in the past, like with John Atkins, who's on the roster right now. Kerry Hyder is another guy.
No, he's gone. We'll never see him again.
Well, he's a restricted free agent, but
we can bring him back.
I don't expect them to exercise the option on him.
He doesn't fit anywhere, huh?
He kind of does, but he kind of doesn't. Remember, he was passed over by Eric Lee. He was passed over by Aquara. His most impactful position was as a nose tackle in their pass rushing sets, and then Hand took that job from him. So he only was able to get back to it when Hand went on IR. So I really don't know if there's enough of a specialty role for Hyder to stick around. It's possible he could. I just don't think I don't think they'll spend the money, even though it's a restricted free agent offer.
Well, he had a nice motor on him. That's too bad.
Sure.
Hopefully he catches on somewhere else.
Yeah, I still think that Achilles, even though he says he's recovered, I think that is an issue. All right. Sorry, we can go to the questions
now. All right. First, Steven Mislavsky. Perfect world with free agency and draft picks. On a four-man front, who are your four starters with two defensive ends and two defensive tackles? Flowers, Ashawn, Snacks, and Hand. I do have to point out, Trey Flowers is not a member of the Detroit Lions.
Not yet.
I know Hand is supposed to be defensive tackle, but I see him playing outside as well.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the versatility of Hand, right? He can be that. When they go to a four-man defensive line, he's the defensive end. And he plays that strong side defensive end.
Close to the strong side.
Yes, exactly. And so, when they want to go four-man, it's Hand. And I actually wouldn't be surprised to see Hand at defensive end when they go three-man and have Robinson, Harrison, and Hand all out there at the same time as well, because they're just too talented of a trio to not find a way to get all of them on the field at the same time.
All right, Waleed Baghdadi, an MSU Lions fan, has similar questions. With Deshaun Hand looking to add quickness this offseason, can you see him being more of a factor on the edge, prompting Quinn to draft a blue-chip defensive lineman high like Ed Oliver? And do you think Oliver could replace Ziggy and play the 7 technique?
I was one of the first ones to say I think Oliver is in play for the Lions at 8 because of several factors. One of them being I think he's capable of playing the 7 technique, and he fits in that mold of what Patricia looks for. I also think the fact that Ashawn Robinson is in a contract year means that they might want to add a guy who can play inside and out like Ed Oliver can. So I do believe Ed Oliver is very much in play, and he would basically be like another Deshaun Hand where you can move him to multiple spots. I mean, imagine having Hand, Robinson, Harrison, and Oliver as a four-man front. That's a pretty scary. I mean, you're not going to run on him. You're going to have a really hard time running on those four. And the pass rush can get there because Hand and Oliver are capable of generating that. So I do think Oliver is very much in play at 8.
All right. Question from Joe.
Yeah.
I won't say perfect conditions. Let's say under very good conditions, the Lions drafted a player like Ed Oliver in the first round.
Sure.
Ed Oliver remains healthy.
Yes.
And plays all 16 games, not necessarily all of them in a starting role. What would be our expectation for a number of sacks by the end of the year? Would we think in the 7 to 9 range? Because, you know, young pass rushing players don't often generate giant numbers because they have a lot to learn.
I would say 6.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I just want to temper everybody's expectations, well, you know, what Ziggy mm-hmm. ended up developing into, or sure. what maybe even if you go way, way back and what mm-hmm. Robert Borchet could do, mm-hmm. you know, like, we're not going to see that right away out of a player, no, out of a young player.
And the thing that
you
I think...
to develop.
The thing that I think people have to remember, recognize as well, is that the Lions had 40-plus sacks, but only one person, I think, had more than six. You know,
everybody
I mean?
Likes a nice sack master, though.
I know, I agree. I agree. But I'm saying this defense is designed to spread
bring
that.
Pressure
spread,
from anywhere.
It's, yes, the sacks get spread around. So I'm not, and this kind of goes for most of the other guys as well. Like if, on my kind of edge board right now, it's Bosa and then Josh Allen, who it's looking more and more like he won't be an option. And then it's a big question mark for me between Ed Oliver and Rashawn Gary. I have Oliver as an interior guy, but I think he could play on that edge side for the Lions. And I'm also much higher on Rashawn Gary than everybody else is. So I just think he fits. I just think he just fits what they want to do so well. I mean, obviously there's flaws with most of the everybody Gary and after is going to have flaws, but Gary has the biggest ceiling, and I think would be the most intriguing. You know, the most popular guy that's being mocked to the Lions right now is Cleveland Farrell out of Clemson.
Shot me down when I picked him.
You know, most people do. Most people pick him, and they like him. I'm just not as big of a fan. I think he would be a nice addition. I don't think he would be a wow addition in my mind. Just because. I don't think his ceiling is as high as, you know, in some of these other players. And for a top 10 guy, you want to have a high ceiling. Montez Sweat's been floated out there. There's some issues with him.
Former Spartan.
Former Spartan. And from the info I'm getting from the people in the Michigan State, contacts they have at Michigan State, he did not run in the right circles at Michigan State.
Well, no, he did. He did not last very long at
right.
Michigan State.
There were some issues there that were problematic, which is, I think, obviously why he was transferring. If the Lions go the Jack route, Brian Burns is the guy that I just mentioned. I think he would be an option. A lot of people really like Jakari Polite. I am not one of them. I think there's too many issues mentally with him. I think his run defense is a problem, and those are two key things that Patricia looks for in those edge defenders. Plus, he's not just underweight, he's also not tall enough for their profile. So he's undersized, underweight, and doesn't stop the run. I mean, there's just too many things that I just don't like about him as a potential pick. And again, this is another situation where I know I'm in the minority. If they don't go edge in the beginning, there's still going to be plenty of guys in the second and third rounds. Jalen Ferguson out of La Tech, who's the sack leader. Charles Omenwehu from Texas is a guy that people really need to pay attention to. If they don't take edge rusher at 8, I would not be surprised if Omenwehu, I think that's how you pronounce it, from Texas, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the pick in round 2. He fits, again, that size profile and does a lot of the things that they like and play inside and out. I like a lot of what he does. Zach Allen from Boston College has the connections through Pescalone. So, and then the list goes on with Chase Winovich and Anthony Nelson from Iowa, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So tons of guys on the edge that are interesting. I mean, it's the same in free agency with Trey Flowers, who we mentioned, Javion Clowney, D Ford. These are all guys we talked about. Frank Clark probably not being in the mix, et cetera. So, I mean, lots of options to add a guy somewhere.
All right. Moving back a level, and we should be moving on because we won't get to safeties until June.
Right.
We're going to talk about jacking off the ball linebackers.
Yep. So the jack linebackers is Devin Kennard and Garrett Dooley, who was a rookie who spent the year on the injured reserve practice squad list. He is a guy with potential. Eli Harold is not returning as of now. It's possible they give him an extension. That would make sense. But again, it's not solidified. If not, this is a position they will need to look at to add some depth to challenge Kennard. In the linebacker level, Jared Davis is your Mike linebacker. Steve Longa will return from IR. Now, Longa is not signed as of yet, but he is an exclusive rights free agent, which means he cannot sign with any other team other than Detroit. So he will more than likely be back. Kelvin Shepard is a free agent, and then Bates was the guy who was just arrested, who we reported on a couple weeks ago. So Mike is looking pretty solid, and on Will, it looks even better. As far as from a depth standpoint, you've got Lott. You're returning all your guys again. Christian Jones was your starter. Jalen Reeves-Maben was the guy who was pushing him for snaps. Grigsby got in there on special teams. Miles Kilbrew got in there on special teams a ton. And then they just signed Trey Williams out of Auburn, who missed last season with a shoulder injury. He's had three big shoulder issues in his career at Auburn, so he's probably more of a special teams guy, but he would be an interesting guy if he actually can stay healthy and develop into his potential. So he's the guy they just signed. Let's get to the questions on this because there's a lot of them.
All right, Jimmy, Kat Kaken, and Craig Boyer have a question matchup. They all had similar questions.
Yeah.
People are focused on edge and cornerback as our priority, but when in New England, Patricia had a lot of great linebackers. 2 years ago, when Hightower was injured, they never recovered. Is linebacker an underrated need? Do you think that we'll target a linebacker in the draft or free agency? How about Devin White in the first to pair with Jared Davis?
Okay, so the first thing I want to do is I just want to address the linebacker usage, okay? Kennard is that Jack linebacker, right? So that Jack linebacker is on the field is almost 100% of the time. The only time that Kennard missed was when he missed a game with injury and Eli Harold filled in. Other than that, Kennard was on the field all the time. And then your Mike linebacker, Jared Davis, he's on the field all the time. And then that leaves you with your Will linebacker for the third in the 3-3 defense here. That third linebacker was Christian Jones. Now, he was on the field 65% of the time. And when he was not, it was Jalen Reeves-Maben, who was on the field 10% of the time. So that third linebacker, even though it's a 3-3 set, that third linebacker was only on the field 75% of the time. All right? If you're going to spend a first-round pick on a guy like White, and he's only going to play 75% of the snaps for you, you're not really maximizing that first-round pick.
It's an inefficient first-round draft pick.
Right? Now, Devin White is also almost an identical guy to Jared Davis. Massive athleticism. He has sideline-to-sideline range. He can hit you with power. He can blitz. But he struggles a little bit in coverage, and he can't. And he struggles reading gaps. And so when you're running a gap system and your two linebackers can't, if they both struggle reading gaps, you're going to have a problem. So I get the appeal of adding White, and he's a great athlete, but you have White on this defense already. His name's Jared Davis. Putting two of them on the field with their gap reading issues, I think would be too problematic and would take White out of the conversation. They're going to need to find a different type of solution. And I don't think that third linebacker warrants enough. Now, if you could add somebody that's going to displace Jared Davis, like a C.J. Mosley in free agency, well, now we're starting to talk, a little bit different. But Devin White isn't going to displace Jared Davis out of the mic. He would play next to him. Matter of fact, there's probably not an off-the-ball linebacker in this class that would displace Jared Davis. You could argue maybe that you think White would, and that's why he's worth it, and I get that. In my mind, he's not. You could maybe argue that Devin Bush or Mac from Alabama, maybe one of those guys could do it. Again, I don't think they would be able to step into this defense and do that. And so if you want to replace Christian Jones, that's fine. But I can't see them spending a first-round pick on a guy unless you have a different plan for Jared Davis.
All right, Morgan Cannon and Arthur ask similar questions as well. How much of a priority do you think it is for the Lions to find another off-ball linebacker in Patricia's defense? Sorry, we kind of got possibly want to take reps at the mic. If we could find a mic, shift Jared Davis to Will and allow him to rush the passer more, we can improve both linebacker spots.
Right, and so that makes sense. If you can upgrade Jared Davis.
Now,
right?
Well, I was going to say, but now you have an inefficient off the ball linebacker again because he spent a first round draft pick on Jared Davis.
I agree.
Or since it happened in the past, it doesn't matter anymore.
Well, that's the thing is you would have to say, I'm okay with Jared Davis being a three quarters player and I'm going to give all of his snaps to somebody else and I'm okay with that. Or, like we talked about, if they decide that they want to alter the if they want to alter how that other edge rusher is, if they want to add two jack linebackers to the equation, then maybe you can start using Jared Davis in that jack role at times as well. It just depends on how you want to address that edge spot. But in assuming that they replace the down defensive end with somebody that, you know, is like Ziggy, and they're going to keep the defense of scheme the same, the only way you're replacing Jared Davis is with probably with C.J. Mosley. And that's really it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe K.J. Wright, but he was injured. Can you trust him? I like Jordan Hicks. He would be a possibility. But again, he's probably better playing on that will spot next to Davis as opposed to in the middle. So I think there's a possibility, but I think the possibility is really slim that they're going to move Jared Davis off that Mike spot.
All right, defend the den. Your thoughts on Khalil Hodge? Seems like a great mid-round value that would bolster the linebackers.
You know, he's been projected to the Lions in a couple of mock drafts in the third round. I think that's a little bit early for me, and I think as we saw the combine list released today and he was not an invite to the combine, that kind of tells you that the league maybe doesn't think he's a day two guy either. It's more of a day three. But if you're going to get him in day three, he would be a very nice addition to the linebacker corps. Because if you have Christian Jones and you have Jalen Reeves-Maben and you're only adding Hodge to the mix, he's going to be an upgrade for Longa. He's going to back up Davis, but he could also maybe push for snaps next to Davis as well with that kind of trio. It would make a trio of him, Christian Jones, and Reeves-Maben. I think adding a guy like that would be a really nice mix. It was something I advocated for last year, adding a linebacker. I'm not against it by any means. I just think based on how their usage of the linebackers was this past season, I think adding a guy on day three like Hodge would make the most sense.
All right, moving to the defensive backfield, we'll start with the cornerbacks. Who's coming back? Who's gone?
So you obviously are bringing back Slay, right? He's under contract for a couple more years. But you also have Nevin Lawson under contract. And then you have Jamal Agnew, who was your starting nickel under contract. Tez Tabor, who was your draft pick under contract. Mike Ford, who showed up in the starting lineup in the back half of the season, he's under contract. And then you have a couple of guys like DeVergen and Andre Chaudhry, who are, were never really found a spot in a lineup, but they're coming back for depth. Marcus Cooper, who played well in his short-lived stint in Detroit, could be a guy they maybe want to reinvest in. And Deshaun Shedd struggled. That was cut. They brought him back, and he's a free agent at the end of this year as well. So it's not clear if he will return. So you're bringing back a lot of the same guys, but this was a unit that struggled in that number two spot. When Nevin Lawson played on the outside, he struggled there. When Agnew was hurt and Lawson played inside, and then they played Mike Ford on the outside, he showed well at times, but he also struggled there. And so that cornerback two spot is a really big potential problem area, but it could be something that is addressed on day two. I've been told that they are more than likely not going to address it in the first round. They're not leaning that way. They don't like any of the guys at eight. I don't think any of the corners really are warrant the eighth pick overall. In my mind, if you're in a win-now mode, which I think they are, I think going after a veteran free agent would make more sense than trying to draft a guy early. Now, that being said, the veteran free agents are mostly old guys or guys that have injuries. There's no real shutdown guy this year. So, you know, Darby's coming off an ACL. Steven Nelson's clean, but he's really the only one. Kareem Jackson and Jason McCourty would be nice additions, but they're going to be short-term guys. So Let's say you add, you know, Super Bowl hero Jason McCourty to the roster. He's 31. You're still going to need to probably draft a guy on day two to be his eventual replacement, unless you think Mike Ford can develop into that, and that, which is a possibility. So my gut is they're probably leaning. Well, you know what? We have some questions, so I won't give away where my gut's leaning.
All right. Leading off the questions is Raymond Nuznov. What do the Lions do with a guy like Lawson that doesn't make interceptions and commits too many penalties? Any cornerbacks in free agency or through a possible trade that would fit the scheme better and would be the perfect complement to Darius Slay?
So when I read the question, I thought, man, Lawson really gets hammered for his penalties. And I'm like, I really feel like it's like blown a little bit out of proportion because it has been in the past. And so then I looked up the penalties, and on the top four penalty takers on the Lions last year were Decker, Ragnow, and Diggs. Each had 5, and then Lawson had 11. So he was more than double anybody else on the team. So I guess it really is warranted. He had 11 penalties last year. 4 of them were holding, 2 of them were pass interference,
it's not so bad that only 2 of them were passing spot 5 pass interferences.
Right, and it's been higher in the past. But yeah, he unfortunately doesn't have real good instincts, right? He's always the guy who's just right there and just misses. He doesn't have a career interception. Does he have 1 now?
I thought he had at least 1 interception. Right?
And then I know he had a fumble he took back to the house. So he doesn't he's just close but not close enough. He's got great speed and great versatility, but I don't think he's going to live up to his contract. His contract right now is $5.2 million, and I don't wow. and that I think makes him a cut candidate, especially if they're going to upgrade somewhere else. So you could cut Lawson, you'd free up $4.2 million. So really, you're only taking $1 million hit. Then you can push that money into somebody else. In my opinion, you could go after a free agent. Like I said, Jason McCourty was a name I threw out there. Jason Verrett, if you think he's healthy. If you can get one of these guys that you think is kind of a stopgap, give him Lawson's money plus a little bit more, and then draft a guy. I think you could probably solve a lot of the problems that you have at corner, but they may have to add, you know, they may have to double dip this way. They may have to go both free agency and the draft. But in my opinion, with wanting to win now, I think getting a free agent is probably the most sound investment that they could make at the cornerback 2 spot.
All right. Nevin Lawson has more career sacks than interceptions.
2.
1-0.
Oh.
And so that fumble recovery for the touchdown, yeah. The run back for the that's what I was thinking about, and that's what you were thinking about.
Yeah.
All right, the next question's from Matt Smith. With all the attention on cornerback as an offseason need, I've heard little about Jamal Agnew. Do you see him as part of the future of Patricia's secondary?
Yeah, he's their starting nickel, right? And the way this is designed is they're going to fluctuate between 3 corners and 3 safeties on the field, and then often they're going to run both 3 corners and 3 safeties. So there's a role for him in that nickel spot. I think if they keep Lawson, which I would be surprised, he could end up at that nickel spot as well. You know, the flexibility of Diggs to play that nickel spot as well as the safety spot really helps that. I actually think they're better inside than at that outside cornerback spot. So I think we're not hearing much about Agnew because people are pretty confident that he's kind of locked in as the nickel right now.
ExoRel says, tease Tabor. The Lions shouldn't give up on him. He's still young. He has a lot of growing room. Should a second year in a 3-4 hybrid defense help his case?
Well, the problem with Tabor has it's never been mental. And with young corners, it's usually the mental part that takes a while to come around. And with Tees, it's not a mental thing.
It's physical.
It's a physical.
He's too slow.
Now, he makes $1.3 million. If you cut him, you only end up freeing up $500,000. So there's not a huge benefit to get rid of him, which is why I think they carry him into the offseason. I would not be surprised, though, if he was one of the cuts at the 53-man cutdown after training camp, though. I think they will give him one more offseason to show he belongs.
Yeah, well, it should get every shot, you know. And if he improves, they got to keep him around. But I don't know. Odds don't look great.
He's running out of time. That's for sure, though.
All right, the main man. It seems that the Lions will almost certainly pick up a cornerback this offseason. Would you rather they address the position in free agency or the draft? You said both.
Yeah.
I lean more towards free agency because of the learning curve for rookie corners.
Yeah, I did kind of – I got ahead of him on that question there. I think free agency really helps you now.
All right, Arthur, you already kind of touched on this a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect us to go with a mid-level type free agent corner and draft one and in the first or second round, or make like a top-tier free agent corner or trade, then grab one in mid to late in the draft?
Yeah, I think it would be a mid-level, but I also think it would be a second or third rounder. I don't think it would be a first.
JC asks, how many productive cornerbacks do you realistically feel they need to revamp the group?
Two.
Two or three.
Two.
Okay, so two. Matt Brockway, Bradley Roby, yay or nay?
Nay. I am not a Roby fan. I know a lot of people like the name and are familiar with him from his college days, but he's a no for me.
Defend the Den. Is DeAndre Baker a better cornerback prospect than Greedy Williams? Is it just Williams' size that has given him an edge? Is Rakia Sin potentially a better value, comparable size to Greedy, in the second, likely lower due to the Temple program, while sticking with an edge guy in the first?
So Greedy's getting hyped up not just because of his height, but his athleticism. He's the same weight as Baker, but he's 3 inches taller. So, I mean, that's going to help. He's got that length. They're both familiar with press. I think people will argue between which one's better. Right now, people are going with Greedy just based on those intangibles. I do think Rocky Sin would be a better value, but you know, Rocky Sin's not as tall as people were thinking. He's actually a shade under 6 feet, where he was listed, I think, at 6'2". If you want a guy who's over 6 foot, Amari Owerwaye from Penn State.
Okay.
He is a legit 6'1 and a half, almost 6'2", 200 pounds. He is a guy that Jeff Risden just wrote up a piece on. He's a guy who if he was there at 43, it's almost a no-brainer. He's a guy who could sneak into the back part of round one. He would be right after that trio of corners where I think he would be the guy that's really the most realistic and will probably end up being the best value.
All right. Finally, the safeties. So it's not June yet, I can tell by the weather.
So like with the offensive line, the big question is with you have a big question
Glover
at your
Quinn.
Central point there with Glover Quinn. They drafted Tracy Walker last year in the third round. Super excited about that. If you remember the celebration in the war room after they made the pick. He developed as the year went on. He flashed a lot of potential. I love his upside. I think Tracy Walker and Diggs are locked in as two starters amongst the safety group. If Quinn comes back, he will be a third, but I think his role will diminish compared to what we've seen in the past. If he does not come back, then Tavon Wilson would be the number three. And you could either see Tracy Walker as the single high, or you could possibly even see Quandre Diggs at the single high. I like that Walker and Diggs are both flexible to play the single high and in the slot, which makes the option of bringing in another safety, it gives you some flexibility on how you want to do it. Top two safeties in this class both have single high capabilities, so I'm interested in that. So all those guys are under contract that I just talked about. They also signed David Jones to a futures deal. And Charles Washington, who's really a special teams guy, he is in a exclusive rights free agent. He will most likely come back on the cheap. So safety units tentatively right now in good shape. If they lose Glover, they can still manage. But I do think they're going to add another safety this year. If they can get a guy like Deontay Thompson or Nasir Adderley, I mean, now you've solved your safety problems for a while getting one of those guys. If either one falls to 43, I think you could see them go after that and really lock down that safety group.
All right. Moving on to the questions. First one's by Joey Two Times. You got the movie reference here?
No.
Goodfellas. Never
mind. Oh, all right. I
could have
guessed
right.
that.
Lots of rumors of cap cut casualties. Lawson, sure. Glover, Tavon Wilson. Even Christian Jones. Can you make a case for either keeping or cutting all these guys?
I think we talked about Lawson being a possible cap casualty. And Tavon Wilson kind of falls into that same category. He was given a two-year contract last year. His contract is just under $4 million. You free up $3 million if you cut him. And so Walker could be a guy that ends up getting got. But if Glover Quinn is also gone, then, you know, you've now depleted half of your safeties. And so then you've got to now add multiple. Because of that, I think they may end up sticking with him a little bit longer just because of the different things that he can do. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they're deciding between Nevin Lawson and Tavon Wilson. I wouldn't be surprised if they cut Tavon Wilson over Lawson just because, or I mean, both of them I don't think are really living up to that $4 million that they're worth right now. I think Christian Jones sticks around right now. I don't think they'll cut Glover. I do think they'll give him an opportunity, but I also think he's probably closer to retiring.
All right. Hail Mary asks, Glover Quinn has been a leader in the locker room. Who do you see filling this role if he doesn't return? Do you think the defensive unit has bought into the culture that Patricia is creating?
Mm-hmm. You know, your vocal leaders are... Devin Kennard is a really vocal leader, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Jared Davis is quieter, but he's the quarterback on defense. He's the one who gets the calls and makes the adjustments. But losing Quinn would be a big thing because Quinn has really been the guy who makes adjustments in the secondary. And if he's not there, you need somebody else to step up. So I'm not sure who that would be in the secondary. It's not really Slay's mentality. Plus, he's off on the edge, usually singling his guy up. So he's not the guy who's back there making adjustments. Could be Quandre Diggs is asked to take on a larger role.
Finally, Stafford defender. Thoughts on signing Landon Collins to replace Quinn? And what are the Lions' chances given other teams that need safeties?
Yeah, I think it would be hard to see them go after one of the top safeties unless it was like Earl Thomas. And even then, I don't think they would pay for him. Collins, if you get him, he's playing a slot role and you're pushing Walker to the single high. Be a lot of fun. I mean, don't get me wrong, that'd be a lot of fun. But I don't know if they'd be willing to pay the price. You know, you got the Honey Badgers out there. Clinton Dix is out there. Marcus Joyner's out there. All of these guys would be super fun to add. It's just the price tag. I just don't know if they can afford to go after one of these guys.
All right. Robert Wedge, do you want me to insert his question here?
Sure.
I don't know if this is crazy talk, but we keep hearing about getting rid of players who weren't, quote, buying in to the system. This is possible that Tate wasn't buying in, and that's why they got rid of him. You can answer via tweet if you prefer.
It wasn't Tate. I know what this rumor was about, and I've heard who people believe the rumors about through the grapevine. But again, I don't like to report on rumors because I don't know. I can't get confirmation on if they're true. But I can tell you that Tate was not one of those guys. Tate was a guy that they really liked and they wanted to keep involved. But I do know there's some dissension. And Albert Breer's talked about that in his Monday Morning Quarterback articles, that they've basically been ironing out the wrinkles. And that's kind of expected whenever you bring in a new coaching staff.
All right. Special teams, we only got a couple minutes left. We're not going to see many changes. Go ahead. Who's shown up and who's sticking around?
I mean, we added Bonamago, right? And then he's bringing him back to be the special teams coach. You still have Prater under contract. You still have Sam Martin under contract.
But he's a question mark a little bit.
Yeah,
he's not as secure possibly. As Prater is. He'll likely be the punter.
They gave Santoso a futures contract to come in and compete because he both kicks and punts, so he can back up both guys in those training camps to give them a rest. Muleback coming off another Pro Bowl. We'll
need to resign him.
Well, mostly, I mean, he gets a 1-year deal every year. And, you know, the big special teams guys are Charles Washington and Miles Killebrew. We talked about Killebrew being under contract, Washington being an exclusive rights free agent. Nick Ballore, we talked about last week, as he's the number 3 special teams guy. And then Tracy Walker was the number 4. And so as far as snaps go, Andy Jones was another big one. He didn't get as many snaps because he was that late addition, but he was a good contributor. So from a special team standpoint, you know, you get Washington that ERFA contract, you re-sign Mulbach, and you bring back 4 of your top 5 snap guys and efficiency guys, and your special teams is coming into the year better than it was last year.
All right, should we hit the Brandon Kerr question real quick?
Whatever we can hit out of these questions.
We're only going to get one of them.
Okay.
So, Brandon asks, how big was that reference that Belichick gave to Patricia's defense versus the Rams? Comparing personnel, where can the Lions improve whether... Right, not that part, just the first part. How big was that reference?
You know, I think if you looked at the 2 games that both teams struggled, both the Patriots and the Rams, the team that they struggled with the most is they both played Detroit, and they both struggled in that game, in their games against Detroit. And so... I think both of teams, when they looked at film, they probably looked at the Lions game and said, okay, what was the game plan and how did it work? Now, the big difference was Detroit didn't have the horses, they didn't have the health, and they didn't have the depth in order to hang with the Rams the way that the Patriots did. And they had all those injuries on offense as well, which contributed to it. But the game plan was there. The game plan was solid. And I think... that type of thing indicates that the scheme and the concepts that these coaches can put out there, there's something to buy into. If you're one of these players that's not buying in, it works. You just have to get the right bodies in place in order to make it happen.
You know, I would hope it means something, but at the same time, this is just Bill Belichick throwing a bone to a guy who used to work for him for several years. You know, at the very least, I'm sure they paid a lot of attention to the video.
Sure.
But, you know, when it comes down to it, it's, oh, yeah, Matt Patricia, great guy, great game planner. That's why we stuck with him. All right. We are out of time, but we do have a couple shout-outs.
Yeah. You know, our iTunes went up another 5 ratings?
Reviews, sure.
Right? With 1 review from Alex One Young. Appreciate that, Alex. And then... Joe got an email from Podbean saying that...
We are on Podbean.
Yeah.
We're not listed anywhere, but we're definitely on it.
Stites?
Tommy Stites.
Stites, right? Okay. He left us a Podbean review, so that was great. Now we know that we can get them there as well. And then I noticed when I went in and checked it...
Stumbled on another one.
There was actually another one on there as well from Cast292. We never gave... Cast292, the recognition when he left the review.
No, because we didn't even know.
Because we didn't know about it. Yeah, so he left one like 6 or 9 months ago, and so appreciate that.
Yeah, wonderful.
And like I said, we keep getting the ratings, which is helping us, because it seems like every time I go on iTunes to check, there's like another Lions podcast out there.
More sharks in the water.
Right.
Yeah.
So this helps us, and we appreciate all the stuff that you folks are doing for us.
All right, and that's it for this go around. Next week, you're going to hear. Well, now we're going to be inching towards free agency, so we're going to be talking a bit more about that and the draft. We're going to be talking about all those things.
Yeah,
and we'll be definitely talking about Bo Nunn's first game with the fleet.
Combine's coming up, so we'll start doing mock reviews. We'll start looking at combine guys to watch. Yeah, we've got a whole bunch of stuff to keep along this line of thinking.
But. You folks listening, as well as the two of us here, will have to wait for that at least another week. So until that time, let's go Lions.